Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of How We Roll Podcast.
Hi.
We're an RPG-based podcast, and we focus on Call of Cthulhu, some Dungeons & Dragons, and occasionally one-off campaigns.
Interesting.
If you're interested in contacting us and want to know where you can find our podcasts, you can visit howwerollpodcast.com.
Fancy.
Which offers links to Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, SoundCloud, Reddit, and Twitch.
What?
If you enjoy what we do and want to support us, you can donate to us on Patreon. And with that said, let's get on with the show.
Yes, please, please just get on with the show. Yes.
Welcome back to How We Roll Podcast. We're playing Bleak Prospect, and I believe we are heading towards the finale. My name is Joe Tritt, and you can find Bleak Prospect in the Nameless Horrors compilation of scenarios available on DriveThruRPG and Chaosium right now. I am joined by some fantastic players, so if we just very quickly introduce ourselves and our characters, and then we'll jump on with the story, because I think we left it on a bit of a cliffhanger last week. So as I said, I'm Joe, and Curran, how are you doing? Who are you playing tonight?
I'm doing well. I'm playing Carl Hochstein, and I believe I am tinkering with a machine.
Short and sweet, I love it. Dave, how are you and who are you playing?
I'm Dave. I'm surviving. The weather is just... I'm sorry, Joe can also hear the thunder now.
Yes.
nice. I'm playing Finn, and I am about to get my face eaten by a nameless horror.
Yeah, it probably worse than both me and Dave live in Manchester, so it's usually raining, and it absolutely is right now.
Yes. There's a reason why I always have a headache. It's like when the weather changes, I get a migraine. The weather always changes.
Nameless horror. Just for listeners to be clear.
What did I say?
It just, that second syllable was clipped a little bit, and it sounded like a one syllable word. And it sounded like you might have been in a house of lady favors.
Nameless house of lady favors.
Horror.
In keeping with Finn's
As
character,
the Americans say.
He would much rather be in, you know, getting his face eaten by a nameless whore. Though, yeah. I just want to reiterate, because apparently there's been some fan stuff that's just like, I play an asshole.
Let's introduce Niall. Welcome back, Niall. How are you and who are you playing?
I'm good, and unlike Joe and Dave, I literally cannot see a cloud in the sky. It's absolutely beautiful outside.
That's
like
great, but talking to the microphone.
Sorry, I was looking out my window. It's beautiful here. I am playing Thomas Dolan, and I just stabbed a fish that wants to eat my face now, apparently.
Yep.
That's where I am.
And Lisa, welcome back to the show, and who are you playing tonight?
Niall, what did you call me? Now, I am Lisa, and I'm playing Agatha Priestley, and she's very ill. She's hard on her luck. Journalist, and now she has a glimmer of hope that she's just seen a daughter get rescued, and now something else has gone awry. There are things in the water that seem ominous, and there are car wheels in the drive.
Oh yes, yeah, we did end on that. So before we jump back and do a bit of a recap, welcome back to the show, Lindy. Thank you for joining us, and who are you playing tonight?
I am super excited to be here. I am playing Maureen Freyan, who just found her daughter Esther, busted her out of a cell in the water-filled basement, almost got her ankle hit by something, and now she is just carrying her daughter to safety, where everything's gonna be just fine and dandy, and we're all gonna, you know, find a doctor, Carl's gonna find a cure for this disease, and everything will be happily ever after, because this is Cthulhu, and they all end in happiness and
rainbows. I was gonna say,
rainbows.
Happy endings all around.
All around.
So, on last week's episode, they managed to heal up poor Carl when his face half licked off by the possessed house. I believe that Carl and Finn started investigating the and trying to get the machine to work, so the Hawk's device, and we had a few breakthroughs there, and Finn had gone a little bit too close to a tank full of nastiness. Meanwhile, the other three characters had headed down into the cellar in search of poor Esther. I think Thomas decided to push a roll, end up falling down the stairs and landing in the bile-like acidic water. He'd sort of jumped out and his whole skin had turned pink and very uncomfortable. And Esther heard the splash and hearing her call out, Maureen charged into the waist-deep water and powered through the sort of maze of the cellar and found her daughter locked behind a sort of makeshift cave. Pulling out her pistol, she shot off the lock with a... What did you roll? Was it a one?
A one. An actual one.
And now has rescued her daughter. Starting to make her way back to the exit, something went for her ankle and Thomas... quick as a flash, dipped his knife into the water and skewered it. It seems to be some horrendous tentacle abomination. Meanwhile, on the stairs, Agatha Priestley was listening out for her two companions to return and heard the sound of wheels. But before we resolve that dilemma, I think we're going to return to Finn and his sanity roll as this sort of strange simian... sort of monkey-like creature has just burst against the window and is the glass in front of you.
Well, I'm actually still remarkably sane for this scenario. I have 39 sanity. Watch me.
Wow.
Fail this with a 56. Yes.
Wow, 56. Well, okay, so can you take 1d6 sanity as this horrendous abomination pushes itself against the glass?
3.
Okay, that's good. Have you lost a fifth of your sanity yet? You probably haven't, actually, have you?
To this session? Or total?
Total.
We all started with 40, didn't we?
So no.
So no. You're absolutely fine. So you kind of jump back and
the hardened
drop
adventurer
your
is still at least hardened, even if he is no longer hard or competent.
And I think Curran, yeah. Carl turns around angrily, sort of glaring at you because he has just made a breakthrough and he believes he can get not only this device to turn on by pulling the switch, the sort of main breaker switch, but he also believes he can sort of adjust the frequencies and capacities and the various different dials and levers and switches to actually create the correct resonance to activate the Hawk's device.
So I'm going to say that when he fell over, I stopped doing what I'm doing and everything's in complete silence. Do I hear the car?
I like that, and I need a listen roll.
52.
Get it, get it.
Against... Oh, I have to go find this. that is a 52 against 40. I will use some luck.
Do you have 12 luck?
Do you have 12 luck?
I do have 12 luck. I'm on 24 luck. I will be on 12 luck at the end.
Okay. Right. There's a nice symmetry to that. Okay. Through the rain, you can hear the sound of a car pulling up around the other side of the house.
Finn, do you hear that? I think I have a solution, but... they seem to be coming back. I can make this machine work, and I can adjust the frequencies in order to contain whatever is brought through.
Did Carl see this thing as well?
No, I just see you on your ass.
You see me on my ass. My face is drained even whiter. Maybe now it's because I'm already sort of white and in scaly. It's turned a sort of an unhealthy yellow. Yes, people I can deal with. And he sort of rolls over, shakes himself off, almost like a dog shaking off a bit of rain or something, and takes up an ambush position next to the door with the machete raised high.
Okay, so if you did want to find a hiding place more suitable, because the way that the machine works is because the door is on the same wall as the machine, you can't get that close to the door.
Right.
You can still ambush and you can stand the door. I think the door actually opens outwards, but you can definitely have that. But there are other places to hide, including that there's a big metal cabinet that you could get inside, no problem as well. Like there's a whole sort of under the tables and things like that. There are good behind the cylinder.
Yeah, I'll pick up like a notepad and pen or something like that, and I will just get into a hiding spot.
Okay, amazing. So he's hiding, not ambushing. I guess I'll when I see him skittering, he's like, oh, we're playing it like that, are we? And I'll head into the I'll get in the cabinet.
Okay, so you wait a few minutes, so you're hidden in this car. Are you both in the cabinet, or where have you hidden, Carl?
We're in the same cabinet, holding hands.
Okay. And have you got it ajar just so you can see through? Or,
yeah, just a little ajar. Yeah. And I'm not really looking
at him with the pen and pad, and I'm like, Should have got a fucking machete.
I have a plan.
I thought you had a machete.
I have a machete.
He has a machete. I have a pad and pen.
Pen and a notepad.
The pen is mightier than the sword.
We'll see how true that really is.
Okay, so you wait a while, and you hear footsteps heading towards you. At least three sets of footsteps. And then you hear a voice which you recognize, and it sounds something like, "Well, so they took me from behind. They were well armed, big fellas, big, and they said they were coming here. I'm sure they're going to be here." Then you hear a murmur, and you don't hear the words, and he says, "Yes, look, the light's on. They're going to be in here, quick. Get your guns ready. I'm sure they're going to be here." And then the door begins to open. Meanwhile, down in the cellar. Lisa, so Agatha, you can hear the sound of splashing towards you as Thomas Dolan and Marine Friend come charging through the water at speed. Thomas is white as a sheet and Marine is carrying her either unconscious or in state of shock daughter. And they burst out of the water and stare at you. Thomas's skin is beginning to blister on any part of the skin you can see exposed.
Agatha, seeing this glimmer of hope that they've actually found her daughter that she didn't remotely believe would be findable, was actually here, was that gives her a new purpose. Everything else in her life is kind of gone, so she's going to use that hoe in her hands to rush in the water and beat in front of her, because she's in case there are tentacles and things and whatever in the fish, whatever in the water, and try to go to them to help them get out.
So Thomas and Maureen, as you kind of charge towards the exit, Agatha jumps into the water, which goes right up to her waist, and she begins hacking at the water like a crazy lady with the hoe, sending sort of splashing in all directions and covering her in this kind of like thick bile-like liquid.
I'm getting out of there.
To me, let's go. Yeah. Yes. And
I'm running fast as I can while carrying Esther.
Up the stairs, out of there, like, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Gone.
Like, literally, so, I want to shepherd them out.
Okay, so you kind of you burst out into the kitchen, and you see through the windows there are this torchlight like flashing around in the garden outside. The rain seems to have ebbed a bit. You can see through the windows there are at least three torches heading towards the large shed where the machine is, the Hawk's device.
When we get to the top, I just like shush everyone again and like kind of crouch and like peek as best as I can. Do I recognize any of them, or can I spot anything? Can I spot weapons or anything like that?
Yeah, so you're the I'm so bad with names. Let me just open up my.
Do we recognize them?
So you can see that the lead character is the skinny figure of Roscoe Malloy. Obviously, his health has been badly affected. His hair has gone white, and his flesh is saggy. But behind him are two figures that you don't recognize. One is huge, well over 6 foot tall, dressed in a very smart suit, and seems to be carrying what seems to be a large shotgun. The other one is a smaller figure, again, dressed immaculately, and this one has a white mask across his face, covering everything below his eyes.
Does he have a weapon?
You can't see. He's, like, the way that he is, that he's the other side of the larger figure.
Does the big guy have a white mask too?
No.
Okay. Can we wait? Well, I don't know about the other two, but can I wait for them to go into the shed before trying to sneak up outside? Okay. And if the other two get attacked, maybe go in and help them out?
I like it. Do you have a weapon?
I have a knife, yeah.
You've got the knife, okay. And so the two ladies, what are you doing?
I'd like to hide behind him until they go into the shed or we won't be seen, and then I want to get us out into the rain and try to wash off this disgusting bile water wetness from the basement.
You're all beginning to sting, actually, like your skin is so sore.
Yeah.
I actually think that Agatha and Maureen, you have a chance of recognising these two people, because I think as the reason why you lost your job at the newspaper is you started investigating the wrong people, Agatha. And one of the people you started investigating was Theodore Sedgwick, who's the guy with the white mask. So 100% know who he is. And I think, Maureen, you do as well. I'm going to need some sort of role to recognise the huge guy, because he's not directly linked to any of you. So I think if you give me a credit rating role, that would work. If you have something like... the thing is, because your credit rating's been harmed, it doesn't really work for this scenario. So if you've got something sensible, like Sir Agatha...
I have art craft etiquette.
I think that would work. Yeah,
that was a socialite.
Yeah,
I'll assist that.
I don't know. You have to do your own roles, I'm afraid. Unless you're going to be chatting about it. Hey, I recognize that guy. You know, I saw him at this ball.
I would definitely relay that to the group, that I know at least one of them.
So, did you say you passed, Lindy?
Mm-hmm, I did.
Okay. So this is a man named Alex Rossetti. He basically has been hired by Theodore to act as a bit like muscle. So one of what Theodore does is during the Great Depression, he aggressively takes over people's companies, and he just always seems to be in the right place at the right time, making the right choices. It's unnaturally gifted with luck, and he does annoy a lot of people, and so he's taken on Alex Rossetti to hire as muscle. And the rumours going around town are that a lot of the people that have gone missing or dead or ended up in Hooverville are there because they had the shit beaten out of them by Alex Rossetti after Theodore Sedgwick stole their livelihoods.
Well, I do declare that is Alex Rossetti.
We're all still inside at this stage, are we?
Yeah.
I've heard rumours of how clever he is.
Well, we gotta get Esther someplace safe.
Okay, what if we take their car and run them over?
That's a good idea. I'm pretty good at driving.
You're also pretty drunk.
Yeah, well, that's not illegal yet.
That's not illegal yet? Okay, awesome.
Did they drive the car in between the house and the shed? Did they drive past the drive?
No. There's not really enough room, or like the garden's way too overgrown. And actually, I've misspoken, so I really apologise. They are actually Alex. Roscoe Malloy is carrying what seems to be a tied up woman over his shoulder, and you recognise her as
is it the lady from Hobo Town? Nancy Carver?
Nancy Carver. Oh, it's Nancy Carver. And Alex Rossetti's face has four long scratches in it, as if it'd been attacked by nails.
Well, so its good HP girl, is lower than girl. Max, okay?
Well, back in episode one, I don't know if you remember, she had blood under her fingernails.
They tried to take her too, but she beat them off. I guess she couldn't beat them off this time.
So let's jump over to the two boys inside the shed. So peeking through the doors of the cupboard, you see Roscoe Malloy desperately trying to carry over his shoulder the struggling woman of Nancy Carver. Followed by the two figures of Alex Rossetti, giant man, huge bull of a man carrying a shotgun, and Theodore Sedgwick, who actually has his hand in his pocket, and so you're not sure if he's armed or not. And he says something like, "Right, get her over there in the chair. We'll activate the device." Someone been messing with the device. No, it doesn't matter. Get her in the chair. We need to get a subject over into her immediately. We need to get some of the essence straight away.
Some of the essence. I'm writing this down.
Do you say that out loud? And they're like, "What the fuck is that?"
So this, where is this metal cupboard in relation to the machine? Is it like under the machine? Is it off to the side of the room? Are they passing
the
by it?
The opposite side
of the
room to the door. So yeah, you're right. A good like 30 feet away, the other side of the room. Yeah. Roscoe Malloy and Alex Rossetti start like tying the struggling form of Nancy to the chair. So initially it's quite difficult, but as more and more of these straps are sort of tied in place and there's like metal clamps that go across her, it seems to be no problem at all.
Doing the sound of that, can we come out? Like,
can I take a penny out of my pocket and through the gap I want to flick it at almost a right angle? So away, essentially I can't quite see the geometry of the room in my head, but I want to flick it in a direction that will get one of them to pass by the cupboard while looking for what the noise was.
Ooh, I like that idea. Okay, so Roscoe Malloy seems to be a bit of the kind of like the gopher of the group. Like he's having to do everything. Mm-hmm. Alex Rossetti is kind of marching around like with this huge shotgun in hand. Like he's obviously suspicious. Like the lights are all on, the generators are running. Roscoe Malloy has told him that he'd been kidnapped and locked in. They've obviously found him in the boot of the car. So he's suspicious. He's basically looking around for any clues, and he is really suspicious. So you're sort of waiting until he gets by to try and like jump him.
You know, Finn, this feels strangely like a coffin.
He thinks silently.
So Roscoe Malloy has like walked over to the workbench as he's put on some of the huge gloves and grabbed like this massive pair of pliers, like the huge pincers, like 4 foot long, and then he's climbed up onto the ladder and is beginning to like open up the tank, and he's dipped the pliers inside, and he's like sort of searching around trying to grab onto something. I think this is maybe a good time to see where we are in the house. So the three of you basically seen them disappear inside, and then the door is closed, leaving you basically the only sight you have now is the night.
Oh, the door is closed. Shit. How far would the car be?
So the car will be around the front of the house. So you're basically at the back of the house now. So you could go to it very quickly and easily. But then there's like a sort of circular driveway or circular sort of parking area with a fountain in the middle.
So we can't get the car back there?
I don't want to drive the car. I just want to search it for more weapons, like another gun.
I want to get Esther into the car. Keep her safe.
So we get Esther safe, we'll go and try to help the other guys.
I really like that idea. Yeah, let's definitely do that. So back inside the shed, Roscoe has like pulled out this creature. Like he seems to be struggling with it, and he's got, you know, sort of two hands, one on each side, and he's lifting it up. And the only thing I can describe is a bit like a lamprey and maybe like a cactus, like if you cross them together. Grey in colour and covered with a thick slime that even from where you are in the shed, you can see it this way in the cupboard. You can see it has this like iridescent purple sheen and smells like spicy vomit. The whole thing is covered in sharp spines and needle tooth mouths all over it. And as it leaves the tank, it begins to like scream, like every little mouth making a scream like a crying baby. And he basically like makes a grab for it and is holding it in his hand with the forceps, and it's like squirming back and forth like this sort of long lamprey.
I could say lampreys are creepy enough in real life. You don't have to Cthulhu them.
Really, really are. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's struggling and he's like holding it at arm's length. If you don't know what a lamprey is, like Google it right now. They're horrendous things.
Mm-hmm. Do the guys in the cupboard see this?
Yeah, they're watching it right now. So, I think a sanity roll is probably...
Thank you, Niall.
No problem.
Yeah.
I actually have surprisingly low sanity.
Right. I fail as well. 58 against a 36.
Ooh. Okay, so going along with everything here, so let me check, because I've just been saying 1d6 off the top of my head. I'm sure Scott has given us some actual stats from the team.
I've got a 36 against 13.
Species 17. Oh, it doesn't. Oh, we'll just go with 1d6 then.
1d6 it is. I lose 3 sanity.
You're down to 10.
No, puts me down to 9.
I lose 3 as well.
Yeah.
Okay, so you are actually temporarily insane. So losing 3 sanity actually will cause a bout of madness. in you, even if you lost 1 sanity. So I do need a intelligence check. I'll give you the intelligence check.
Hey, Dave, just remember, Mr. Alex Rossetti had to put down a shotgun to pick up that thing.
No, because it's.
I failed.
Rossetti's still walking around with a shotgun. This is Roscoe.
I thought Rossetti had to pick up the thing.
No, it's Roscoe. Okay.
I failed with a 92 against 63.
Oh, so like you kind of like go to scream, and then suddenly your kind of like mind just breaks, and it's like you're watching yourself watching this happening. And in fact, it's maybe even a step beyond that. It's like you're watching yourself watching this, like, and you just kind of just stared and like slack jawed, amazement and horror at the scene panning out before you.
The world is flat. Yep.
As he starts muttering to himself, I just look at him and think, okay, I'm glad he only has a pencil now.
Geocentric model. Yes, yes. It all makes sense now.
So you hear Sedgwick say something like, right, get it into her. We need to do this right now. And Roscoe begins, like, clambering down the ladder and holding this squirming, lampreyish creature, which you hear them refer to as Species 17, and he carries it over to the struggling form of Nancy Carver. And he basically, like, thrusts it towards her. And this is where it goes really strange. And you, the way that the cupboards angle and the chairs angle, you can actually see this, remarkably. Otherwise, it would make a terrible story. And like her, it's almost like the creature is out of phase with her, and there's almost like this, like a stone going through water, like a ripple across her body, as the creature is just kind of like pushed into her, and it sort of disappears right inside her, and completely is gone. And she just starts screaming, or would do if she wasn't gagged.
So I'm imagining they're fairly fixated on this, right? I can't do anything because I'm insane.
Mind broken.
Yeah. But I failed my intelligence, so I don't understand it, right?
So I think at this point, I'm not sure if you have a coin. Like, I don't think that fits the scenario very well. But like, what could there be in the cupboard, Dave, that you'd like to find? Like,
a nut, a bolt, a washer, a rock, anything small.
And do you just want to drop it near the cupboard, or just in a way that he's going to walk?
Well, I mean, depending upon where he is when I do this, it's essentially to draw him as close as possible across the cupboard door so I can get him from behind. And I don't want the sound to come from the cupboard. I want it to be away from the cupboard.
So almost like you start, wait until he's on your right and then throw it to your left.
Yes.
So he walks in front. Perfect. So you'll just have to wait a moment for him to kind of walk into place, but 100% that can happen. So you kind of waiting for this time. You're in, ready to throw it, and meanwhile, Carl, you're kind of watching in horror as Roscoe Malloy then kind of reaches over to Nancy Carver, and his hands disappear inside her, like past his wrist, and then he pulls out this creature again that seems to be fattened somehow, and it's mewling, almost seems like a satisfied gurgle. But then what he does is goes over to Sedgwick, who kind of like tenses, and then he thrusts it into Sedgwick.
What?
And that's the moment when you throw the nut. And we have what's
it? And we switch over to the other party.
100%. You know how we do things.
I do.
And if it was around 50 minutes, it'd be, and that's where we'll end the episode. Okay, so outside, okay. You've made it to the car. So this is the Rolls-Royce, the one that we saw, like the Phantom or something, driving down the driveway when you first arrived at Prospect.
That almost, knocked us. Or would have almost knocked us.
Oh, it wasn't Prospect. This was at Roscoe Malloy's house.
Back at my house, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So you've seen this car before.
Green Lays.
Really, really expensive. So you start searching it. It is not locked, and you can basically open up all the things. But if you want to find something useful, I'm going to need a luck roll.
is this him?
How about this?
Guy?
I'll let everyone roll a luck roll,
including me.
Yeah.
That's not everyone.
I find some like.
She finds the most useful thing.
God, Lisa found a one. Roll a one.
Oh, wow. Okay, Lisa, yes. you can find two things. One really good thing of your choice.
I'd like to find the keys.
Okay, done. You can have one more thing as well. The keys are, for some reason, left in the the ignition, because they certainly had them in 1932, 33.
Can I have a gun?
Okay.
Yes. Okay.
So that's two of us that are armed.
Okay. So you've got a gun, and I'll even let you choose whether it's a handgun or a shotgun.
Handgun.
Handgun is yours.
Shotguns are so strong, though.
Yeah, but you need a separate skill.
I honestly don't think in my decayed illness state, I don't think I would be able to operate a shotgun. I think it'd be too heavy for me.
Yeah, the kick just like dislocates your shoulder.
Yeah, exactly.
No, removes her shoulder.
Yeah. Did anyone else pass their luck roll?
No.
Okay, so you're kind of looking through the boot, Niall, and you might find like a tire jack and like blankets, and you find like a first aid kit and things like that, but nothing like weaponizable. Lindy, you kind of go in the back seat and you get your daughter laid down and you maybe cover her with the blankets, but she's just either in complete shock or unconscious. Like, she doesn't seem to be responding, but she is breathing. When you look at her, you see that like her veins are standing out against her skin and kind of like almost black, and you look down at yourself and you see the same. Like, walking in that water has done you no favours at all. And actually, do you remember what you said, like Roscoe Malloy had these things like creeping under his flesh? You're really worried that there's something in your veins, because the black seems to be moving.
No, I don't remember
around,
that, like, because my temporary insanity was I forgot.
Absolutely forgotten that. So,
in
the dusky light of the car, you can't see enough to cause a sanity check, but you feel worried. Meanwhile, Lisa, your character's gone over to the glove compartment, opened it up, and in there is a handgun.
I'll take that, put it in the pocket of my tattered and worn, almost mangy fur coat, and grab the keys from the ignition.
Okay, so where do you want to do? What do you want to do? Where are you going to go?
I want to go back and help the other guys out.
Yeah, I want to book it back to help them.
Okay, so you kind of charge back through the wind. The rain seems to have petered off, your feet splashing in the mud. You take care to walk as quietly as you can, but it's hard. You arrive, the doors are still closed, and from within you can hear the sound of sort of Nancy Carver sort of screaming against her gag, almost in like sort of apoplectic horror. How are you going to approach it? You're going to open it a bit.
Do the doors open outwards or inwards?
The doors open outwards.
So can we maybe have like two of us on one side and one on the other, and like open both doors outwards but hide behind them?
Exactly.
So someone has to come out and check?
Yeah. Like the wind has blown them open or something.
Yeah.
So, sorry, just say that again.
We want to open the doors outwards but hide behind them so they can't see anyone outside, but the doors are open and they'll have to come out and investigate.
I love that. Okay, so inside, you have Alex Rossetti has just passed, or is about to pass by the door, Dave. Meanwhile, Roscoe Malloy is about to thrust his hands back into Theodore Sedgwick to retrieve this squirming lamprey. Nancy Carver is like just screaming behind her gag. And Alex Rossetti passes by the door. And at that moment, the doors to the shed fly open as if in the wind, and Alex Rossetti begins to turn his back to you.
I stab him in the back with the machete. Actually, no, a machete's a slashing weapon. I hack at his clavicle with the machete.
Oh, okay. Nice.
So 100%, like he has not seeing this coming at all. You can 100% roll with a bonus dice.
How does it? Well, it doesn't matter. I succeed. What's a bonus die? I roll another
d10. You roll another d10. Yeah, roll the tens again.
Yeah, I don't want to replace a 4 with a 9, so that's a success with a machete.
Nice. Okay, so roll for
screaming
damage.
Screaming like a banshee.
Yes!
I'm a crazy motherfucker! What is the damage on a machete?
It's either 1d6 or 1d8. I think let's just go for... I'm not going to search through. Let's go for 1d8. I think it's going to be 1d8 plus any damage bonus you have.
None.
If your strength plus size is more than 120...
It's on the sheet.
You have a damage
no. Okay. I rolled for 4 damage.
Okay, so like you kind of scream and jump at an angle, but the door kind of gets in the way and you feel the top of the machete scraping against the top of the cupboard. You still bring it down with some force, opening up a horrendous gash on his sort of across his neck, leaving this kind of bright red smile, and he sort of stumbles to one knee and spins round in shock and horror at seeing your kind of emaciated, dusty form, and he kind of points, recognising you. You can see that recognition in his eyes. Anyone outside, how do you want to handle this? In fact, one more thing. So Roscoe Malloy, in fear, kind of has thrust his hands into Theodore's throat and has pulled out the lamprey and then looked over and seen you and has dropped it. And the thing has started squirming around and has kind of like then grabs onto his throat and begins like screaming. He's like, oh no, he's got me. Oh shit.
Well, he seems taken care of.
Oh, Roscoe.
Okay. So I hear Dave scream.
Yes.
So I think he's either being attacked or is attacking someone. So the original plan of getting them by surprise, I'm going to ignore. And I'm assuming that friggin' Theodore is looking at Mr. Alex Rossetti, who just got cut across the neck.
Yeah.
So can I, like, try to just rush in the door and just stab him in the back with my knife?
Because he turns around to look, he gets stabbed again.
Yeah, it's like, yes! Yeah, it's like a revolving door of death.
Okay. Welcome to How We Roll and the Stabbing.
So you sort of charge forward and Theodore Sedgwick at this sort of... It's almost like he has this sort of, like, preternatural sense, or always just incredibly lucky. And as you kind of sort of stumble towards him or run towards him, you stumble and make a squeak on the floor, and he hears it and begins to turn around, but not really in time, and he kind of just raises his arm to try and block your blow. So can I have a brawl roll?
Yes, you can. That's a success.
Oh!
Okay, let's see what he gets.
Nice.
So he rolls 89.
He spends 1,000 luck.
And he is going to spend 50 luck.
What? Holy.
It won't be 50. So he rolls an 89, so 42. So he's going to spend...
he has 42 luck.
He's the defender, so he just needs to match you. He needs to get 42 luck. So he's going to spend 47 luck to... And somehow his hand just gets in the way and pushes the knife aside, and you feel yourself flying past him towards where Roscoe Malloy is fighting with this horrendous creature. And as you see this thing in front of you and you're falling towards it, you just roll sanity.
All right. I fail. I rolled a 97 versus 28.
So 1d6 sanity. So you just take 2 sanity. Does that take you over a fifth?
Let's see. No, it does not. I'm still on 38. I'm doing pretty good. Wait. Minus 2. Oh, yeah, probably. What do we start off on?
40.
40.
All right. I'm on 26 now. So that's definitely over a fifth.
Definitely over a fifth. Okay. So can I have an intelligence check, please?
Fuck. I'm actually kind of smart, too. This really, really sucks. Oh yeah, when I need it to be a shit roll, I get a good one.
Okay, this is too much. Everything begins to crash down on you, and you've seen these sort of your health decay, and you see this horrendous creature in front of you. And you just give me a D10, please.
Okay, I got a 10.
Okay, so this is a mania. So your brain has actually broken. Can you give me a D100 roll?
These are fun, man. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
They can be. They can be completely random as well.
Totally.
If you rolled 88, you'd be compulsive nose picking.
I got 47. Oh, no.
Again, these are completely random. Okay, so this is gamomania. Obsession with issuing odd marriage proposals.
I just want to see you stabbing someone to death maniacally while saying, "Marry me! Marry me! Marry me!"
As I stumble towards Roscoe, I just kind of like fall onto one knee and like holding the knife in front of me in two hands. I'm just like, "Will you marry me?"
Okay, the women outside. This is oddly.
The guy with the shotgun, yes. I would presume to be the biggest threat. So can I shoot at him?
He's literally the other side of the room though, and between you and them, you have Sedgwick, you have Thomas, you have Roscoe, and then you grappling with him is Dave's character Finn. So it's not going to be an easy shot, and I'll need a penalty dice if you want to aim for Alex.
But if I can just swing around the door to see him kneeling in front of Roscoe, that should give me a pretty great point-blank shot.
At Roscoe.
Right, at Roscoe. Well,
between, so the closest person is actually Sedgwick. So basically, Sedgwick. Niall has run in, tried to slam Sedgwick.
Sedgwick, I'm sorry.
And has basically just sort of been turned aside and crashed into Roscoe. This horrendous creature. But like, Sedgwick's right in front of you.
Yeah, I'll try to shoot Sedgwick then.
Okay, so you're within point blank range. You get a bonus dice. Are you going to fire one shot or are you going to unload on him?
Ooh.
I want to fire one.
Okay.
Yeah, I only have so much ammo.
Yeah, and there's more threats in the room. I just
If it was the last guy standing, I'll fan the hammer, but no.
Right, exactly.
Ooh.
Okay, so let's just do it one at a time. So, Lindy, what did you roll?
I rolled a 65 out of 60. I'm considering spending my last 5 luck and making that a... You know what?
Do
Why
it,
not?
Do it, do
Let's,
it.
Doesn't it mean you're dead if you run out of luck?
No.
Doesn't it?
Really
No,
unlucky.
It doesn't.
So out of luck, I'm sure you're not allowed to go to 0.
Oh.
No?
Yeah, like you only go to 0 when you're dead.
Oh, well then, shnikes.
I feel like I should probably out. Like, I vaguely remember rolling that if you're out of luck, your character dies.
Yeah, you told me that on Thursday.
Yeah, but I don't know where I've got.
I feel
from.
Like it's more likely that your character's dead when you're out of health. But that's
well,
just
I,
my
I think
own
that's
take on this.
True. Actually, it's that's only true if you have a major wound. If you're out of health and you don't have a major wound, you just fall unconscious. But I almost feel that just for the sake of this scenario, we might just say you can go to 0 luck and be corrected on Twitter at a later time.
We look forward to
that. Okay, so you have hit, and he kind of looks shocked. And there's this kind of moment of, you know, someone who's just so sure and so confident that nothing could ever happen to him. And he's just sort of like blocked aside this incredible blow. And then as this boom has gone off and he's been shot, it struck him. Do you want to roll for damage?
Yeah, it's a d10, I believe. Yeah, okay.
Come on, 10. 7.
7? Not bad.
Oh, and that is a major wound. And he has failed his constitution roll. Let me just check. 52 might not be.
Oh, he might be unconscious.
Still warm. We can feed him to the whatever that device is.
Yeah, he's failed. He's failed. He just drops the ground, clutching his chest.
Good
sort
shot.
Of blood seeping between his fingers, and just falls flat on his face.
That's for kidnapping my daughter, you punk!
Agatha, Lisa.
I rolled a 61.
Is that a success?
I don't know. I don't.
I'm going to go with 100%. It's not
say
a success. No. Because your base
have...
is definitely not over 60.
Yeah, my is 60. Because
my what would I be looking at?
Firearms
hanger.
I don't think I have anything on this sheet that says firearms.
So it's gonna
be
the basic,
be a base
which
of 20 then.
20, yeah. 25.
It's the second column in and about 5 down.
I don't have a column. I just have a little.
Yeah, you're safe. So yours is 100% a miss. The two shots go off, and you're not entirely sure whether you missed or hit but either way, Sedgwick has just dropped flat to the floor. On right behind him, you can see that. Roscoe Malloy is struggling with this lamprey which is grabbed onto his neck, and the spines are sort of ripping him to shreds as well, and his struggles are beginning to this flailing is beginning to stop. Thomas Owens like flung himself back away from it, but we need to resolve Finn versus Alex.
Can I have gone back around behind the door after taking that shot so I'm not in visual range?
And I'm just going to stand my ground.
Okay, so Alex has spun round, and it's Dex, Dave. So Alex has a Dex of 60.
Sorry, say again.
Alex has a Dex of 60, so it's Dex goes first.
I have a Dex of 45.
Okay, so basically, like, he sort of spins round, holding onto his neck where this horrendous gash is, and just sort of smiles and sort of flings his other arm out to make a connect with your jaw. And he gets a 47 versus 55, which is a hit, but you can either dodge or brawl back. So it's just a normal success.
And I roll a 10, so I just bring up the machete to meet his fist.
So what's your brawl? So 45, so it's not an extreme success unless you want to spend one luck.
Oh, yo, I'm spending one luck.
So one luck turns it into an extreme success, which means you do full damage plus damage. You've got an impale.
So 8 plus... So
8 plus 1d8.
6.
Oh my god, 14 damage.
14 damage.
Plus a 3 that's already done.
So how do you kill him?
I just bring the weapon up, and as he comes in to punch, I literally just take his arm about half off, halfway up his forearm, and the arterial spurt is just spraying. And between the blood loss of that and the blood loss from the neck wound, he just slowly shrinks to the floor, just giving me this utterly befuddled look before slumping over.
Fantastic. Okay, we can drop out of initiative.
Does he have a gun? Did he have a gun?
He had the shotgun.
I pick up the shotgun.
Whee.
And without losing a round of ammunition, which would happen every time in movies when they do this, I rack it for dramatic effect.
Yes.
Just almost gaze lovingly.
Am I still just muttering to myself in the cupboard?
Yeah, what's Carol up to?
Yeah, I've just been sitting in the cupboard the whole time, muttering to myself. Was I able to act there? Because I didn't do anything.
You tell me, what would you like to do?
Well, I would have liked to have like left the closet while all the action was happening, but I guess that's not possible now.
All the action ended in like 2 rounds.
Yeah.
I'll say I just sort of like walk out really...
The lamprey is still like squirming across the floor trying to find a victim. If you want to go for it, it's there. You've got your pencil.
No, I'm just going to walk out.
The new
Greg. I'll walk out very casually looking at the pad. I'm scribbling down. Like, okay, so they take this over here. They put it over there. Right, everyone. I think I know how we can fix this. Firstly, somebody grab some gloves and secure the lamprey-looking thing.
Well, all right. All right.
Is anybody game?
I'll go. I'll go.
Don't forget to use the gloves. And I point at the gloves like the gloves I'm wearing. Yeah.
Can I just do one thing first?
Mm-hmm.
Can I just go over and, like, stab Roscoe and Theodore in the throat and make sure they're dead?
Wow.
I'm glad someone's filling in for Bart.
As you approach Theodore, you see that the mask has been pulled aside and his cheeks and mouth are covered in tiny purple mouths with razor-sharp teeth that are kind of like growing from his flesh. And they're kind of like mewling, the same kind of like baby-like crying that the lamprey sort of species 17 was making. And it's almost like they're crawling. As he's died, they're dying as well.
Fuck. I'm just trying to do a good thing. Oh my god. 100.
Natural
100. Oh my god.
100% bout of madness. Give me 1d10.
Welcome to your brain vacation in Bermuda.
What does that make me lose? Is that just a max 6 or what?
Yeah, so you lose 6 sanity straight away.
6 sanity.
And give me a 1d10.
Down to 20.
Oh no.
Got a 10.
I got a 10.
So another mania. So
I am just
best. You've got uncontrollable compulsion for making inappropriate marriage proposals.
Already, yeah. So what's my next one?
Give me a 1d100.
Like 98.
At 98. Pathological blindness. Typhlomania.
So like...
Oh shit.
Am I just blind then or what?
Yep. 100%.
Sweet.
Yeah. This is too much, and this sort of darkness descends across your vision.
Oh,
I just like, yeah. I just kill him and then I'm just
screaming.
Like,
no, you haven't even killed him. Like, well, I mean, you don't know. Maybe he's already dead, but you haven't done this. It's just as you've kind of approached him.
Oh, come on. Okay, then I'm blind. Can I just start stabbing blindly?
I think probably to everyone else, Thomas just looks down. Maybe he has sort of stabbed him and then has just started screaming, like clutching his face in his eyes.
Ah! He just like start stabbing where I remember his corpse being.
He has a bloody haze that's going in every direction.
Good heavens, good lordy. There he is, there he is. Ooh. Oh dear.
I can't see.
Well, you're getting a lot of blood all over yourself. Stop. Maybe you got some in your eyes.
Stop sobbing.
I hear Agatha's voice, and I just like I stop stabbing and I turn around. Like, will you marry me, Agatha?
Yes, of course I will, dear. Come to my voice.
Okay. What I might do is just epilogue this moment, not the snow, just this moment. So maybe it's like it's an hour later. So you've pulled the bodies to one side. Thomas, like you just have his sight hasn't come back, and like you know he's in a mess. But he's over to one side. You've got him calm. Maybe he's had a sort of a drink of something, and he's sedated, and he's under control.
Yeah, and I walk him very gently towards an iron chair where we clasp him in. As promised, this won't hurt.
Yes.
I mean, like there's already someone in it. Why not just like take advantage of that and just use it?
The wow. Lamprey is back in the tank. The three bodies are 100% dead.
Can I get Nancy out of there? Is she dead?
No, Nancy is in a state of shock, and she explains to you that they came back for her. But she wasn't really the most sane person anyway.
She wasn't. I make sure my bottle is extra tucked in, so cause she was my rival alcoholic in the little shanty
back
town.
In Hooverville.
So, but basically, they'd gone into the shanty town at this evening, like a few hours ago, and they just started like shooting and attacking everyone until they finally managed to take someone down who was alive and unharmed, grabbed onto her, threw her into the car. They heard the sound of them stopping and releasing Roscoe and then driving down the driveway, and the rest you know. But yeah, she's in pieces and really struggling with the like every time you touch her, like a whole chunk of her flesh just begins to flake away. Like the disease has progressed even further with her.
So I'm gonna think that maybe my only way of finding a solution to cure us all will be for me to actually transport myself to where these things come from.
That's a choice.
And so I'm going to go myself, because no one else would understand it.
Yeah, and also you're insane.
Yep.
Yes. I think I have the solution. Okay, and I start putting myself in the chair. I need a hand. Somebody please just secure these straps. I've made the necessary adjustments to the machine.
Oh, are you sure about this, Carl?
I'm not particularly sure. I'm trying to look at my DM to see if he cares.
this is your epilogue to write. Or your epitaph to write, I guess.
Epitaph!
I was going to say, we're all still dying, though, aren't we?
Encouraging words.
Yeah, we're all going to die.
We're all dying anyway.
Unless we find a solution, we're all doomed anyway.
Maybe you should work on finding a solution instead of making interstellar trips.
So what I will allow you to do is once you've turned the machine on, you'll be able to use it. Because what you've learned how to do now is to turn it on. Once it's running, there's a chance that you might be able to learn more about how the machine works and maybe a solution.
Okay, so I'm gonna try and... Well, I've already got my critical success.
You know what to do, yeah. So you can turn it on. So you sort of tell everyone to stand back... and begin to sort of go through the various processes that will turn it on. And it is a lot more than just throwing the switch. So initially nothing happens, but then suddenly there's this kind of glow, and there's a cluster of glass bulbs that begin to kind of splutter and then get lighter and lighter and lighter and then become so light, they're kind of filament glowing with intense power. There's a spluttering, which turns into a whine and then suddenly stops with this like horrendous drone, so soft that it's almost like a return to silence, but it grates against you like ground glass. The luminosity in the ring begins to increase, and then it assumes this kind of pale, like ultra color, or sort of a blend of colors that you just can't place. And then suddenly you realize with your extreme success that you are actually looking at ultraviolet, and the ring is allowing your perception to see that within the bounds of the device, within this circle. And it is on.
Is there anything that I would know from research that I've read or rumors that I've heard on why this might be impacting us the way that it is?
So before you give me your role, so that within the circle, things are beginning to change, and it's almost like a complete a cylinder. So trapped within it, the reality is beginning to crumble. And at first, it just seems to be this infinite, sightless, soundless space. like a void with nothing more, and you feel all your childish fears, that kind of that the reason why children are scared of the dark and why they're fearful to look out of a window into the night, it suddenly kind of just falls across every single one of you, and you feel yourself stepping back for a moment and questioning what on earth you're doing. And then, from the farthermost regions of remoteness, a sound begins to glide through the blackness, and you can see this sound. Somehow, the sound waves are visible within the ring, infinitely faint and subtly vibrant, and unmistakably musical, but with a quality of surpassing wildness, which, if you were a Lovecraft fan, would make you think of Azeroth and his blind minstrels playing away in the center of the universe. And it's this delicate torture of your whole body, and again this scratching of ground glass approaches you again, and simultaneously there's this cold draft which flows across all of you, breaking the confines of the ring. And this is where I'd like you to roll me a combined physics and electrical repair roll. Unless anyone wants to jump into the ring, we can do that.
Just rolled a 5 against 75.
Okay.
Yes!
Okay, so the way it's... what seems to be happening is the creatures within this alternate reality are out of phase. Mm-hmm. And by carrying them across the ring and putting in the, sort of where they're in the tank, they are still out of phase, which is why you can put them into someone and take them out without breaking the flesh. The problem that you all have is you believe that there are creatures or maybe parasites connected with these creatures that are inside of you, but both in phase and out of phase. So the best thing you can do is break the confines of the ring, and so that you are all kind of forcing the creatures, that are the parasites that are within you, to become phased with our dimension fully. So this will damage you, because obviously these creatures are going to suddenly exist within you, but then you could go and have some sort of surgery and have them removed.
Okay, so...
Yes!
I think I can heal us, but there's going to be some risk involved.
Well, isn't that medicine?
But I don't think your chances of success are quite as high. So this phasing of reality... we're going to have to sit inside the barrier to essentially bring what is ailing us into our reality. And then...
all right.
Then it will be possible for surgery, perhaps. But I don't think any of us can afford surgery because we are destitute.
So I may have misspoke, or maybe not explained it. So the best way of doing it would be to break the confines of the ring so that their reality seeps into... So that it's almost like reversing the polarity of the ring, so it's mm-hmm. forcing everything outside the ring to become in phase with our universe fully.
Sure.
Stepping into the ring is definitely an option, but would probably be a bad one.
Okay.
Even if you want to survive this scenario.
So I'm going to try and do it. Just without telling anyone.
I like that. Just do it.
Just break the ring.
I'm just going to do it.
I think it's a great idea. I think 100% we should just... I'm not even going to ask you to roll for it. In fact, I am. No, 100% you're going to have to roll for it.
Oh, but I got a 5. The chances of me getting anything nearly as good as a 5 again is really low.
I don't know. If you look at the last 3 rolls before that, I used up all the bad luck, I'm pretty sure.
Natural 100. Natural 10.
Natural 10. Yeah. 98.
Come on, Corinne. I believe in your luck.
So as you kind of start, so there's these various switches that have been marked with like red crosses, like sort of some electrical tape put across them, and you begin to peel them off and flip the switches, and the humming becomes crazy as the machine is overloaded.
Brace yourselves. Bam. I get an 88 against 100.
Oh!
An 88 versus what? Sorry, what's your physics? What's your electrical repair?
My physics is 75. My electrical player is 65.
Okay, so that's a fail.
Yes.
Right.
How much luck do you have?
You could push it.
Yes.
Do you have luck? First, do you have luck? Any luck?
He has 12 luck. It's one shy.
That's not enough. So So you realize that you've messed up the frequency, and basically the whole area is too much, and the only option you can think of is by just thrusting all the bent up power of the generators into the machine and having this kind of one explosion of power which should be able to level the instability that you've created.
So I'm going to cross the beams.
Yeah.
Are you ready? Boom. 94 against
100.
Oh,
no!
I am so sorry, Finn.
Okay, so for everyone else, there is this incredible vortex of sound and motion in the center of the ring. These confused picture before your eyes that seem to blur in and out of sort of reality. You can see the room within the room within the room, and then it suddenly starts pouring out of the ring. The containment is completely broken as this column of unrecognizable shapes or clouds penetrate the ring, and suddenly you are completely surrounded with these unidentified sense impressions. You feel that every single part of the room is filled with these strange forms, some living, some not, almost like these kind of like jellyish type forms are flowing around you and through you and all over you. And then suddenly, in the center of the ring, you see glowing suns begin to form, a constellation or a galaxy, a settled shape beginning to distort, and you see, I guess Carl, you're the person that recognised this, the enormous face of Aston Hawks begins to scream his way out of the ring.
Oh, Aston, how have you been? No, obviously I'm going to roll sanity, right? Okay.
I'll vote on this, but I actually think this is a great time for an epilogue.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
It is an indeterminate amount of time later. Your dreams are tortured and nightmarish. A strange world of unimaginable figures and strange realities where these non-Euclidean angles seem to break everything you know and understand, and you just feel like, I don't know if you've ever been so drunk that just even lying down just makes you feel ill, the world spinning around you. It's that, but like times a million, it's horrendous. And suddenly, and I think I'm going to focus on Finn, your eyes flick open. You look up, and you seem to be in a hospital bed. The sort of fluorescence above you are bright, but don't seem quite right somehow. You kind of sit yourself up and you see your four companions on beds next to you. The room itself seems to be grey or maybe kind of like a light sort of khaki green. And there's a man sat next to you, and he says, Mr. Anders, glad you're awake. My name is Lucas Mackey. Have you ever heard of Delta Green? And I think that's where we'll leave this episode and this scenario. So thank you so much for playing. I hope it's been fun. My name's Joe Trier, and I've been the keeper tonight. The writer of this scenario is Scott Dorwood, and it's from Nameless Horrors, available on Chaos. And definitely check it out. And I've been joined by five fantastic players. Thank you so much for joining me. How can we contact you guys? And again, thank you so much for playing. Starting off with, let's start off with Lisa.
Hello, I am Lisa Lee. You can find me on Twitter at Lisa Bell, LISABELLE. And you can find me on the How We Roll Discord. And you can hear me as Meryl in Threads in the Veil on Nerdsmith.
Brilliant. Dave?
My name's Dave. You can hear me here, and on Swordnut Radio sometimes, all the time. If this podcast is too sane and too organized and too cogent and not crass enough for you, check us out on Swordnut Radio. You can contact me at BartholomewArmand@gmail.com.
Corin?
Hey, Curran, you can find me on Twitter at HowWeRollCurran or on the HowWeRoll Discord.
And Niall?
I do not have a Twitter, but I can always be found on the HowWeRoll Discord.
Who the hell have I been linking? Aren't you Blarka, or is that just some random...
Oh, well, yeah, but I do have it, but I don't use it.
Oh, right, I was worried there for a sec.
I don't know the last time I've actually logged into it.
Okay.
But yeah.
That's good. And our special guest for this episode and for this whole scenario, and it's been a real pleasure having you on, Lindy, so I really hope you've enjoyed it and you'll join us again. But again, how can people contact you?
Oh, I've had a blast. This has been awesome. You guys are great to play with, and I would be happy to play with y'all anytime. You can find me online at LaughLoveLindy on Twitch, Twitter, pretty much everywhere. I do a lot of Dungeons & Dragons, a lot of Call of Cthulhu, a lot of just tabletop in general. You should definitely check out, if you liked Call of Cthulhu podcast, you should check out Tomes of Tentacles, where it's, you know, insanity and tentacles, and it's great. Awful and wonderful all at the same time.
If you hadn't have mentioned it, I'd have said the same. The whole Yellow King stuff you've done is just fantastic, and it's just so terrifying. Great group of people and great DM, so fantastic. And again, thank you so much everyone for playing. It's been a real blast, and I can't believe we've actually managed to turn Bleak Prospect into an ending of sorts. You know, something so satisfying. And thank you everyone for listening. We'll be back next week, hopefully, with some more Call of Cthulhu. So tune in to find out what we're up to.
Yay!
What?
Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a brand new scenario. A scenario that was written and published by, well, me. If you can't wait until next week, then the first two episodes are available right now on our Patreon. All you need to do to access them is visit patreon.com/howwerollpodcast and make a small donation, which really helps to keep the show going. Before we go, we want to say a huge thank you to battlebars.com for sharing with us their sound effects and music. You should definitely check them out. We also have a gold chest giveaway from our partners at Idle Champions of the Forgotten Realms. All you need to do is log into the game and enter this code SMURPLODDUSKMUTE. That's all from us. Take care, and we'll see you next time.